time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit, and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation, all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Syria and the use of chemical weapons, top of the show, friends. And what do you think about these attempts, some would say desperate attempts, to derail Brett Kavanaugh from the Supreme Court? Interesting developments there, and also one of the other Supreme Court justices came out, had a few things to say. We'll talk about all that today. What is the attraction to socialism, I wonder? Maybe somebody has an answer for that, and we'll find out today. Also, a cult of corruption. We have a panel discussion coming about the CBS, the culture of hypocrisy, with what's been happening there with the 60 Minutes producer and the president, the top guy there at CBS. Also, Google. You did see that Google, that video, Google, did you not? That was something else here. Just after the election, that is gone viral and is circulating through the internet here. So, again, a cult of corruption. We'll talk about that. And I've got a really interesting conversation to have with you all today about the forces of good versus evil. And where does Donald Trump fit into all of this, I wonder? I guess it depends upon which headlines you're reading, friends. Let's get to the top of the show here, friends, and welcome on, please. Ilana Friedman is here. She's a strategic counterterrorism intelligence analyst. Ilana trained in Israel, and she focuses on the impact of terrorism and its threat to America and the West. She's a weekly columnist right here at America Out Loud, friends. Also joining us, Holly McKay. It's great to have her back. She has covered conflicts and crises in more than 20 countries around the world. Holly's a 12-year investigative and war reporter for Fox News Digital, and this should be a great discussion here, friends. So I want to start, ladies, with talking about Syria and the use of these chemical weapons here. Just last week, Russian forces and the Syrian regime, Bashar al-Assad, were using airstrikes, barrel bombs, rockets, artillery, fire in Idlib there. The last few days, it seems to have calmed down a little bit. Now, there are a lot of moving pieces to this Syria conflict, remember, friends. Ilana, why do you think it's sort of, are we seeing a change more or less in the past several days versus the last couple of weeks here with the forces there?
You have Turkey moving their troops to the Syrian border. That was on Friday. Mm-hmm. And you have another situation with Russia, who has a totally different agenda from Turkey, and Iran, which has its own agenda. And each one is, they're struggling. They tried to have a meeting. It didn't work out because Russia and Iran really do not want to have a settlement over Syria. They want to finish the job. And I think what we're looking at now is Turkey, which was trying to get a settlement, now moving its troops to the border. Russia has deployed over time 63,000 troops, Russian troops, into Syria. And so you've got an enormously complicated situation there. You've got the three countries. Mm-hmm. You've got the still have different groups, terrorist groups, operating in secret now because they've been under such a horrific assault by Assad, and which is okay, they're terrorists. But nevertheless, the civilian loss has been absolutely enormous. We're talking about a million lost and still going strong. I mean, it's just people are continue to die under the hands of these four maniacal governments. It's all coming to the head over Idlib.
Yeah, let's remind folks.
The city they're after
that's
now.
Right. Let's remind folks that that is near Turkey. The last really stronghold of the rebels there in Idlib there that we have here. Holly, you wrote a very interesting piece in Fox Digital that I seen, and it's you say here in that piece. Ramani there, the advocacy manager at the Syria campaign, and he said, the offensive is certainly on hold, and that is in large part a result of the renewed commitment from the United States to establish consequences should Russia and the regime continue with reckless bombing of Idlib there, is what he said. This is, again, this last area here that's being held out. you know, we had that that summit, that meeting, where Russia, Iran, and Turkey, as Ilana just mentioned, had come together here just about a week or so ago. And you've got multiple agendas there. Everybody knows that in the area. But I guess they couldn't really get on the same page. How could they when they all have different agendas here, really? What do you think now? What do you make of this? And with the comments coming out here from the Syria campaign?
Right. Well, at the beginning of the week, there was quite intense bombing in more remote areas of Idlib by the Russian and the Syrian warplanes. And that seems to have halted over the last 2 to 3 days. And I think Russia is really running the show in Syria. Syria is very depleted. It doesn't have strong troops on the ground anymore. It doesn't have the money. So it's really Russia. It's Russia's game to play here. And I think we are seeing a stall because Russia knows what's at stake. We're seeing the European Union. We're seeing the US. We're seeing Turkey. We're seeing these groups come together and put their foot down. And the language has really changed. We used to have a posture where it was just about chemical weapons. Do not use chemical weapons. Right. And our language changed to do not use barrel bombs. Do not go on an all-out assault. And so I think Russia has changed its language. Initially, it was saying we're going to end this by the end of September. Now they're saying we're going to end it by the end of the year. So they are giving a little bit of cushion room there for diplomacy, for something to happen, because they do know what's at stake if they continue with an all-out assault. There will be a price to pay, and I think that they're on their heels a little bit with that.
Right. Now, the question becomes, is that enough to hold them off? I mean, you know, the end of the year will be here quick enough, obviously. But is that enough to hold them off? And, you know, it's all about timing out there, as you say, Holly. And, you know, are they patient enough? Because, you know, eventually something's going to have to give with this thing. Of course, we've known that for the last many years. But what we have, you know, I got to tell you, Holly, Ilana, I've watched some of the videos of the people out there. My heart goes out to the Syrian people. These are the moms and the dads and the kids and the real, really, really great people that are having to build bunkers and having to put bags over their kids' heads. And I mean, some of the videos are just over the top. I mean, what they're doing to try to save their families, because they realize that they've got a madman just down the road, and they realize Russia has their hand in here. What? So this reprieve, Holly, let me stay with you just a quick moment. When you mention this reprieve, and we talked about what's happened over the last couple of days, what do we really sense out there with all the players and the posturing going on? I mean, you know, is it just a matter of time before the Syrian people are faced in that particular last area where they're faced with, you know, the brutality of Assad and, as you say, Russia, which is really the big culprit here in all of this? Or is there a light at the end of this thing, potentially, for these people?
I think it's really hard to say at this point. At the moment, I think there's a hope that somehow the strong language and diplomacy in some way, shape, or form is going to work. I think there's a lot of pressure on Turkey to take care, or for whatever, how you can describe that, for the probably around 10,000 Al-Qaeda-linked terrorists that are in the Idlib area, which is significant, but there are also 3.5 million civilians there that have nothing to do with this terrorism. So It's really, I think, at this point, Turkey's responsibility to weed out the terrorists and somehow deal with that component of it before an agreement can be reached. It's really hard to know how that's going to happen. I think with a little bit of extra time, we can see things play out. But the strong language, I think, does help, because Russia needs to know and Iran needs to know that there are consequences if you continue this.
Yeah.
And for the people in Syria, they can't just go back to the regime. These people in Idlib, the numbers in Idlib have swelled so much because they're people that have fled from other areas that are against the regime. They can't just go back and live under Assad. They would be thrown in jail. Their families would be killed. There are so many other consequences if that was to happen. Yeah. And it's so complicated, and it should have never got to this point.
Just take a moment here. I want to remind everybody that we're talking about human lives here, people. This is what really gets me about these kinds of situations. And, as you know, you hear Ilana, the way she positions it so well, that everybody's got an agenda. We know what the agenda is here, clearly. And it's being postured by these madmen and people who are running these operations in countries. But again, my last thought on this goes out to the people of Syria. I can't speak enough about this. The families, the children, the moms, the dads, the brothers, the young people that, you know, could be in any part of the world. But again, it's sad, sad, sad that the world can't come together. And that's just me speaking here, that can't help and save these people. Again, you watch some of the videos, friends, and you'll have tears in your eyes, I assure you, because I know I've done it and I've seen, and it's sad. Let's talk about Brett Kavanaugh a moment, please. Wow. So you're seeing the hearings, the confirmation hearings were absolutely a circus, a spectacular circus, clearly. Democrats now are trying to pull out all the weapons they possibly can to stop him. But that's kind of what they promised from the beginning. I mean, Chuck Schumer, the minority leader, he made that very clear from the get-go, that they were going to do everything they could to stop them. And they've been trying for that. So you have this, now you've got this letter from the Senator Dianne Feinstein now. And she's the one of the senior ranking members of the Judiciary Committee. And she's had it evidently since July, is what I'm understanding. But it's only recently surfaced, if this is all accurate here. And she said she didn't want to bring it out sooner because the accuser's privacy and because the events were too far in the past. Well, this has happened when he was in high school, people. Now, if I took a quiz right now and asked every one of you, including Ilana and Holly, about some of the nasty things you've done in high school, I'm afraid of the list you would all give me, quite frankly. And, you know, half of you folks would end up somewhere. I don't even want to say where. But anyways, you get the point. We've all done some silly things. But this, whatever this is, again, you see, what happens is you throw this in the public mindset is what you do. It's really political warfare is what we do. It's media. It's hype media. And you throw it out there, true or not true, we have no idea. But it starts to leave these ideas in your mind is what the whole, and then it's a victory. Well, that's kind of what Feinstein has sort of done here. She said she didn't know what to do with this thing. She held it back, didn't really share it with Democratic operatives. Now she sort of flushed it over to the FBI. The FBI looks and says, well, what do you want us to do with this thing? I mean, they really don't know. So they put it in his file, like good stewards, I guess, right? Holly McKay, are they losing their minds?
Well, it's certainly been a circus. And I guess the question with what Dianne Feinstein's done here is, is this character assassination, is it a smear campaign, or is it a serious thing? And I think these allegations are really serious, irrespective of how long ago they happened. Mm-hmm. But it's a bizarre situation because what we're seeing, you know, and it is disqualifying if what we're seeing is true, but these allegations are so vague, they're anonymous, they seem to be really devoid of any details. And so I think that's really important before there is any guilt established, is to how legitimate are these claims. And I think that's the question that everybody is going to have to ask themselves. Is it going to be tried in the court of public opinion, or is there something more to this? And so I think at this point, unless we can come out with something that's going to substantiate the claims, which of course Kavanaugh has denied, mm-hmm. I just see this as being something of a smear campaign at this point.
Yeah, Holly, you just said it, the court of public opinion. Thanks for saying that, because that's exactly what I'm looking for here. In other words, friends, if you can't defeat him with real facts and figures, whoever it is, I mean, left, right, center, whatever, and you can't do it in the confirmation hearings, then your only last alternative is a Hail Mary. It's the court of public opinion. And that's kind of what's happened now in the 11th hour here against this. Well, Ilana, Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, who you never hear from anymore, he doesn't say much about anything. Well, he called his own contentious confirmation hearings back in 1991 as a high-tech lynching, he says. He took a jab at Booker just this week here, just happened a couple days ago here, during a conversation with the Federalist Society that aired on C-SPAN, by the way, everybody. He says, and I quote, "If we could use that word about people, honorable, who are in public life, people who actually ask the questions at confirmation hearings instead of Spartacus," the Clarence Thomas comes out and says, of course, the audience was laughing at that point. He said it would make a difference, but we're not making a difference. We're using this in a circus atmosphere. He had some pretty strong words to say, Clarence Thomas had, about this, Ilana. What's your take on all of this at this point? And is any of this going to stop the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation at this point? Because it looks like he's going to be green-lighted unless something happens again at the last moment here, Ilana.
Well, I first of all, I'm very glad to hear that he came out and made a comment, because I think that shows how seriously he takes this. He went through this himself.
Exactly.
When he was being vetted for his seat on the Supreme Court. And I think that this whole situation with Dianne Feinstein bringing this letter out now, she had ample opportunity to talk about it, to question him in private and public. She didn't right. take advantage of any of that. She did it as a kind of Hail Mary at the end.
That's it.
To use the operative word, which is, you know, sexual harassment. That's the key word now that gets everybody's blood up. And she was doing that in order, and I'm not sure that she didn't make it up, but because there's no accuser, there's no crime,
right.
there's no indiscretion. You don't even know what it is he's being accused of.
Something that he did when
he was 17.
Oh,
yeah, who cares?
Ilana. Sexual harassment is the key word, but you know the other key word, Ilana, is, beside that, the word anonymous. That's the other key word in all these things today, anonymous,
well, in this country,
Holly was saying.
Malcolm, in this country, I always thought we had the right to face our accuser.
I know.
And if she were going to bring somebody this out, she should have been prepared to bring the accuser out. As it was, I think 60-some-odd women came out and vouched for his integrity his good behavior throughout his life.
It seems to me, Holly, I get the sense, and maybe it's just me, I don't know, but I'd like you to opine on it. I get the feeling these days right now, we seem to be at a tipping point coming really quick with all this. I think that's a word I'm going to be using quite a bit here in the weeks ahead as we get to the midterm election in November, Holly. But I get the feeling, the sense, it's not business as usual out there right now. What I mean by that is the stakes are very, very high. I mean, if you take a look at everything we're talking about with the Supreme Court and all of that happening right now, the midterm election, the hatred for Donald Trump, what's really happening right now with Congress, where's the House and Senate going to fall after November? And then you've got this Bob Woodward book coming out, Fear, which is selling a lot of books, by the way, creating all of this chaos again. Court of public opinion, Holly, which is what you were talking about moments ago about the president. True or not, we don't know. Anonymous anywhere. In fact, a lot of the people Woodward is quoting in the book are coming out saying, I never said that. And there's starting to be a whole battle there as well. But you got all that going on. Okay, you got all this tainting of public opinion and videos and things that have been thrown out there. Now enter Barack Obama, stage left. He comes out, he wants credit for the economy. He's going to be on the campaign trail now. And he comes out and, you know, he wants all the credit. He says that it started on his watch, not Trump's, and that he should have his due share here. And then you have all of this attraction to socialism coming out. They're not hiding it anymore, Holly. It's out in the public purview here, in the public square, socialism. Which it's hard to understand the attraction of all this. What is your take on this tipping point that I talk about? What's your gut tell you? What's your sense?
Honestly, I think we're at a point where there just is so much noise out there and there are so many people driving different agendas that everybody's going to look at these situations through the lens of their own belief. Most people are in echo chambers. I think people have already made up their mind whether they like Donald Trump or whether they don't, or whether they're going to believe in something like the Kavanaugh allegations or not, whether they think socialism is great or not. At this point, I'm sort of starting to doubt how much people can really be persuaded outside of that. Mm-hmm. So I think that there just is so much noise out there that we already sort of have our minds made up of how we're going to read a situation and whether we're going to believe it or not.
Right, right.
So I just think we are at a point where I don't know how easy it is to change people's mind from one side to the other. I think that's something. It's just so overloaded.
I think I agree with you, Holly. It's kind of baked into the cake. You either hate or love. I mean, I get that. Everybody should get that and understand that. But I'm wondering, like, for instance, if you remember when Trump won in 2016, the polls were completely wrong. I mean, they were upside down, backwards, people. There wasn't any of them that were really correct. I mean, everything was leading a certain way. And you've seen the mouths of gas and everybody shocked when Trump took it all, which means that people were not being honest with the pollsters. They knew that what the stakes were. There is a movement out there for a lot of this. And you never think we'd be having the conversation in the public square about socialism in America. I never thought as a young boy all the way through to today. And of course, I still consider myself a young boy, but that's another point for another day, people. But the point is that, I never thought that we'd be talking about this in the public square today. But yeah, I just want to point to one last story, Ilana, real fast here. as a point in case, I have a lot of people and friends and people I know from Venezuela. Venezuela is really a great country of great people, like a lot of areas. Again, the humans, I talk humankind, human spirit. People are beautiful in every part of the world, people. And the Venezuela people are amazing people. And yet, there's a story I've seen just a couple of days ago out in many forums, including the Washington Post, about the Venezuela crisis. Socialism is so bad there in that country that they're abandoning their beloved pets. I mean, and when I started to read into the story, Ilana, it really made me sick because they can't even, they're getting paid nothing, like $10 a month these people are being paid, if, even as a school teacher and a nurse. They don't have the money because of socialism. I mean, and this, these people are running on this in America? They think Americans are going to subscribe to the socialism theory? I mean, you've got to be out of your mind.
There are two things here. One is what's happening in Venezuela, which is horrendous. They've got a population of 32 million people. And the president, Maduro, just raised the minimum wage, unbelievable, 3,000%. So as a result, people who had jobs are now losing them, as little as they were being paid before. So you have people swarming toward the border, and they're being pushed back by their neighboring states because they can't handle the influx of immigrants who are trying to flee Venezuela. The situation there is so bad that people are starving. They are, as you say, they're abandoning their pets because they can't afford to feed themselves, no less their pets. And it's gotten to be a huge disaster. But then you come here and you see people like Jim Carrey, who says, we have to embrace socialism.
Did you see that?
Jim Carrey has a net worth of $150 million.
I mean,
And the thing that really amazes me is that these people like Jim Carrey, these very wealthy one percenters, their whole careers have been built in an industry whose stock and trade is fantasy. And they want us to believe it. They're experts in the economy.
That's a great line. That's a great line, Ilana. I love it. I love it. No, that what you just said. What you just said is a quotable quote. That is a line and a half there. But they built their lives in fantasy, Holly. I love that line there. You know, I mean, come on. I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah, they live their lives in fantasy, and they want to tell us now what the reality is. I mean, think a minute, people. Just stop a minute and think about what was just said. It's unreal. And I'm so glad you brought up Jim Carrey, because we all seen that story. And I've really gotten to despise a lot of these celebrities that are not holding their tongue, and they're forcing us to swallow their opinions. We enjoy them as actors and actresses and singers and sports players, but we don't exactly enjoy their views, and we don't want them to subscribe to them, nor do they want do we want them to force them on us people. Listen, you know, there's so much to say about this, friends, I have to tell you, and we're passionate about it, very, very clearly. Tremendous thank you here to Ilana Friedman and Holly McKay. What a great conversation. So much more we could talk about on this. Friends, here on Viewpoint up next here, we're going to take on this cult of corruption. What a great segue, right? There's a lot to talk about in this powerful panel discussion coming up next. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Well, friends, we talk about the tipping point in all of this. And I think there is a sense out there there is a tipping point as the midterm elections are coming soon, and you see many people collectively are losing their minds. But I'm going to talk to you next about this cult of corruption that seems to exist I think it's everywhere. I think, and let me give you a point in case a couple of things here specifically. Did you see what happened this week on CBS broadcasting? Big news there, really. The big guy, the big honcho there, Les Moonves, he comes out and he departed amid a cascade of sexual assault and misconduct allegations. You always love it when that comes out, right? You can put that in asterisks a moment, you know? So sexual harassment and cover-up. A corrupt system is being exposed again. And then you had Jeff Fagler there, the executive producer of 60 Minutes on Fagler had come out, and he also has resigned. This has all happened there at CBS, and that's just the tip. Then you see the video with Google. You see that video came out. That's gone viral all over the place there, and where they, after the election, they were in their corporate boardrooms having a meltdown, and then they said, we're not biased. Okay, you think the American people will believe that, people? Let's talk about that cult of corruption next, please. Welcome on the show here. Dennis Santiago is here. Dennis is a global risk and financial analyst. His subject matter expertise includes strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability, and how to avoid sexual abuse. Brian Gold is here. He served in the U.S. Army and U.S. Special Forces for over 3 decades. He now works with the Department of Defense and is the CEO of Applied Solutions Consulting. You know, Brian, I should ask you a pointed question right up front in this segment. Have you ever been accused of sexual abuse in the corporate boardroom?
No, I have not.
All right, but I digress. All right, there you go. How about you, Dennis? How about you, Mr. Santiago?
People keep asking me to stand up for video conferences to prove that I have pants on.
Oh, I knew it. I knew it. So it's all out in the open now here. So, all right, guys, let's take this serious now. So let's talk a moment here now that we set the table, right? So what do you make of the CBS with Les Moonves coming out here, and then you see what's happened with 60 Minutes here? And again, we're seeing this in corporate culture just about everywhere. Now, interestingly enough, what this happened with CBS this week, I want to throw a little tidbit out here. One of your favorite personalities, Brian, and Dennis, Jane Fonda. Well, she comes out and she says she believes the downfall of Les Moonves won't be the last we'll see among powerful entertainment industry executives. It's a shame he didn't behave, she says, but now it's coming back to get him. Dennis, I mean, this is about as deep and long and far. I mean, is anybody removed from these kinds of problems in this movement today we're seeing about sexual abuse and allegations?
No, I don't think anybody is remote from that at this point. I mean, you know, you got people accusing people of having done something at a party when they were in high school, right? And so that's kind of we're at that point of ridiculousness. And I actually agree with Jane Fonda on that statement that Moonves is not the last of the entertainment and news execs that are going to get hit by this. It's been part of the culprit culture of that world for a very long time, going, you know, very, very far back. And it's being called to account in today's day and age. To the point of, you know, some of it's legitimate, some of it's ridiculous, but you know, that's kind of the stage that we're at right now. It's a phase we're going through, and I don't actually know what the right answer is between, you know, where the line of propriety and ridiculousness lies. But we're certainly exploring it, and we're exploring it in public, that's for sure.
Yeah. You know, just to the CBS point here, so they come out officially, their statements from CBS News is this action today is not directly related to the allegations surfaced in press reports. This is what they say, Brian, okay? Which continue to be investigated independently, he says. This is CBS News President David Rhodes comes out with this. It's his statement. However, he violated company policy, and it is our commitment to uphold those policies at every level. And so then he goes on and says that, now listen to this now. I want everybody to digest this. So the 60 Minutes guy, Fagler here, he comes out, he has spent more than 30 years at CBS. 30 years, people, okay? All right? Including time as the executive producer on the CBS Evening News and the first chairman of CBS News. And the network terminates his contract because he sent a text message to one of our own CBS reporters demanding that she be fair and covering a story. This is their official statement, Brian. That it's not the sexual allegations, abuse and all of this with the women coming forward, but it's just that he sent a text message that was inappropriate and they didn't like it, so they're going to terminate a 30-year executive that was coveted and loved in the network. Are you buying any of that?
Malcolm, absolutely not. And thanks again for having me on. Now, I'm very concerned about this movement. This movement has a lot of slippery slopes on it for me, and I don't agree with it at all. And by the way, I thought that was pretty rich coming from Hanoi Jane, that it's going to come back and get you. I thought that was pretty good. But I would tell you, I have a problem with this. There are legal statutes and legal standards for things like rape and, you know, assault and things like that. And we seem to have thrown the law book right out the window in America these days. Now we can try someone on the court of public opinion and throw their name up on Instagram, and you can have them fired, you can have them excommunicated, you can have them, you know, never be able to make a living again because some people felt that that was the right thing to do. That's not how our system works in America.
But why are the men getting away with this, Dennis? And why is it acceptable? Why has it been acceptable throughout our lifetimes? Maybe we didn't know about it, but this has been going on. I mean, sex is being used in a lot of ways, but these stories go pretty deep and far. But to me, this says a lot about society. And this says about the fact of how men and women are behaving. I think this is a profound story. All of these stories are when it comes to, I'm talking about, human kindness, decency, Dennis. Where am I at? Am I an old school thinker here, or because I can't wrap my minds around some of this, Santiago? What do you think?
You're a real nice guy, Malcolm.
Tell me.
Okay, so you know, most people are decent in their actions,
except not in the corporate boardroom. You're saying. Who are the people that are decent? Is what I'm trying to find out.
Well, I'm basically saying, look, this goes both ways. Okay. I've been in corporate boardrooms and back and forths and all kinds of business and personal situations. Right. Men and women are equally guilty of this kind of behavior, right? Okay, it's not right now. There's a movement that is trying to blame it all on men. That's garbage. All right, women do just as much of this stuff. I mean, you know, this goes all the way back to the 1970s, man. You know, like pick up a copy of My Secret Garden and read it. I mean, this has been around for a very long time. I remember the sexual revolution coming around, you know, because I was young then and seeing it and the whole fight for equality of being able to express yourself both ways, you know, that happens.
Okay, but are the women being hypocrites now? I just want to understand this problem.
Yeah.
Are the women, they are being hypocrites?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
All right.
I mean, you know, and the bottom line is it's going to come around and it's going to boomerang right back to
interesting.
Them when the time comes, because, you know, it's like trying to paint all men as misogynists.
Right.
Just because you were born male? Come on.
So you don't believe in the toxic masculinity deal then?
No.
No.
Okay. Are you toxic? Am I toxic? I mean, you know, we're friends. We know each other.
Right.
Have you ever known either one of us to be toxic people?
I have not, my friend. I have not. Brian, talk to me about what we're talking about, this women. I mean, are women a lot at fault here for a lot of this culture that's happening, or are we out of context? Is it the men? Is Dennis wrong?
I don't think it's the men, and I don't think it's the women. I think what you have is you have the same thing that's going on in a lot of the other political spectrum. You have a very, very vocal minority that is attacking an issue for a political purpose. And that's what this is all about. The women that are out there running this Me Too movement, there are women out there who have been legitimately sexually harassed and assaulted and raped, and those are tragedies. Rape is a tragedy. But, you know, if a guy tries to get a kiss from me at the end of the night, that's not rape, okay? Mm-hmm. That's not sexual assault. Mm-hmm. That's just a guy who had too much to drink trying to get a kiss at the end of the night. And the same thing for a woman. If a woman grabs a guy by the behind, hey, you know, okay, is it sexual harassment? I don't know. You can play the game all day. Is it rape? No. And they're taking away from the idea of rape. And it's tragic because women who get raped, it is a tragedy. But this movement is more politically driven than it is sexually driven. This is all about having power and control, and that's what we're showing with the CBS executive. We got him fired. That's exactly what they're saying. We got him fired. Mm-hmm. You didn't have a trial. You didn't have court. He never even met his accusers or never got a chance to present himself. That's wrong. That is wrong way to do this, but it's a political movement. It's not a sexual movement.
Interesting. Yeah, I subscribe to some of what you're saying, Dennis. I would assume you agree with some of that. The power is really the power they're after. That's the corruptness part of this. So clearly, more than the sex, right?
Oh, yeah. It's not just a power. I mean, you know, I look at it, well, there's a desire for power and a desire for control, right? Mm-hmm. The fact of the matter is, if you really get to know some of these personalities, and, you know, and I have the character flaws too, you know, we're awkward at these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And being awkward at something like sexuality can be very, very intimidating to people, and they react weird to it. Mm-hmm. Okay? And when all is said and done, it's not a crime to be awkward in those kinds of social situations, but to turn it into something to become indignant about,
right?
That just bothers me.
Your point is right, but listen, it depends if that's, like Brian says, a kiss at the end of the night, or whether that is something more than that, Dennis, how indignant that is, you know?
People... Yeah, I mean, if you take it too far, and you haven't learned your lessons about where decorum lies, and you know that's a problem. But like I said, that problem exists in both men and women.
All right, you take a look at broadcast media, a free press, the Fourth Estate, whatever, you know, many ways we can call this. Journalists that were tasked to report the news have become so mixed with editorial opinion that it fails to serve the people, but serves, as you were saying, Brian, a political agenda. My question, I guess, is this corruption of our constitutional rights and responsibilities of the press? Have we completely lost it, Brian? I mean, think about everything that's happened and what we're talking about here.
Oh, I think we have lost it. I think it's crazy. I think the whole thing is absolutely crazy. You can't even turn on the news today and watch any simulation of normality anymore. It, where people come up with the stuff, the Spartacus, the call to arms against the conservatives, I think the whole gambit has just literally become unhinged. And I don't see any sign of it getting better, no matter what happens in November.
Well, talking about unhinged, before I talk to you both about Google, did either of you see by chance the very interesting interview conversation that Tucker Carlson had with the Stormy Davis attorney Avenatti there? Any of you see that by chance?
No, I try not to watch stuff that hurts my brain.
Exactly. How about you, Brian? No, you didn't see it, right?
No, actually, I have to say I did not. I was on the road last couple of days. Oh, I'm sorry, I missed that.
All right. I typically don't watch Tucker Carlson. I don't watch a lot of these cats because I just don't. I'm just one of those that get a few minutes, but I don't get corrupted by mainstream media news or any of these people. But I happened, that was muted in the back, and I happened to see this this sign come up on the screen that said creepy porn lawyer. Creepy porn lawyer. And I thought, what is that? Well, Tucker,
that's a factual description.
I had to turn it on, Dennis Santiago, and I had to watch, and it was the most hysterical interview, the most fascinating interwoven conversation of two human beings that I think I've seen in the last decade, of Tucker Carlson and the Stormy Davis attorney Avenatti. You got to go see it if you haven't seen it, friends. He comes out, Tucker Carlson, and says, why has it that her life, Stormy Daniels, has stalled, dancing in low-life strip bars, yet you're wearing thousands of dollar suits and profiting from it all? You are an exploiter of women. Back to the whole Me Too movement and sexual things, and now you've got Stormy Daniels who's looking for her claim to fame and all of this. What do you take in that? Again, the interview was hysterical, beyond hysterical if you haven't seen it. I think Tucker should get a Nobel Prize of some sort for that particular interview, quite frankly. And I, again, don't watch a lot of his stuff, but that was funny as hell. What do you think on that? Any point to that with the creepy porn lawyer, you think, guys, or what?
I think that is misogyny of the highest order. It is. I mean, you're exploiting people's life stories.
So you agree with Tucker with that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, and that lawyer is not the only one that does that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of stuff that I think legitimately needs to be examined in society. Is you know, like why are you taking what happens to normal good people? And the less they're maybe not so normal people and turning it to profit. I mean, there's something ethically wrong with that.
But that's an American fever, though. That's reality television. That's the creme de la creme of the 21st century on aired television. And it's disgusting.
Totally agree. I mean, you know, and then back to your point about the news media falling into that. I mean, right. You know, like I took on Bloomberg last week, you
know,
because
great, like, piece,
they,
great
they,
piece.
They sent their reporters out and did a hit piece.
Right.
And I just wasn't going to take it. So I just had to write something.
That column, that article Dennis is talking about is right on AmericaOutloud.com, friends. It's very well worth reading, where he did take on the hit piece from Bloomberg. I enjoyed the read, as so many others did. It is interesting with this. That's why I bring up the Tucker Carlson thing, because I agree with both of you in the sense that, you know, we're just not watching a lot of that stuff anymore. Because as you say, Brian, it's just really media theatrical propaganda. Listen, I want to talk to you both about Google real quickly here. So Google, the Trump campaign manager, comes out and says Google is a threat to the Republic. And so what's happened here is this. Google was exposed as, of course, that's the right word to use today, people, right? Exposed. So Google was exposed as having high-ranking management involved in shaping the election information to favor, you know, that lady there that was running for president, Hillary Clinton. And so that you should see them in the meltdown they're having in that viral video, if you haven't seen it yet. And they collectively, we're talking here, friends, the CEO, the CFO, this is the C-level suite of Google. This is not mid-management, it's not low management, it's not the parking lot attendant. This is the high-level people running Google. And you can see the meltdown they were having after the election. And then they say, we're not biased, we're not any of that, you know. And then he says they're a threat to the Republic. Straight out, Dennis, I mean, are they a threat to the Republic? Google, and all the power that they have with the search engines and YouTube and all of that, are they a threat to the Republic?
I would say technology of Google is a very powerful thing, and that there are people in positions of power within Google that are able to manipulate that and have done so in the past. Mm-hmm. That they're as dangerous as a concentrated dose of Russian bots, right?
Brian, tell me, what, based on everything we just said, you hear Dennis and put, okay, what can we do about it? What can we do about that culture from companies like Google?
I think we have to not look at it as a culture and look at it as a business. We have antitrust laws in America, and Google falls under those antitrust laws, and I think they should be. I think that should be executed. I think Google has, they've bought up everything. They have no competition. They've become overpowerful and influential in the country. And that's why we have antitrust laws. And I think we should definitely invoke those upon them and start cracking that puppy up, because they have no control over what they're doing right now.
Speaking of which, Dennis, you hear Brian, what he says now. Our Attorney General, the esteemed Jeff Sessions, you either love him or hate him. So he announced that he was gathering state attorney generals to examine whether companies like Google, Facebook, Twitter, etc., are intentionally stifling the free exchange of ideas online. Should the Attorney General do more? And what about what Brian says there?
Yeah, I think he should. And because, you know, if you look at the structure of that industry, it started off with thousands of these kinds of sites and systems. And it's winnowed down to a handful. That's concentrated power. Mm-hmm. And that calls into question whether or not going forward, if you have that concentration of power, then they become technically utilities. All right. And right, a utility has an obligation, mm-hmm, for fairness of delivery that that goes beyond what a single business is. Right. And we're kind of at that stage with examining these guys. There's two ways to fix it. You could break them up, you know, using antitrust. That's and right. Say, no, there have to be at least 25, 30 of these companies around, and they need to be spread around, mm-hmm, so that no single person can get more than 50% exactly, market control.
Exactly.
Those are standard antitrust rules. That's how the law is written.
Well,
and
right.
You turn them into regulated utilities. Those are our two paths.
Well, that makes me think. That makes me think. No, I like what you say there, Dennis. We haven't chosen a path yet. I mean, I hear you loud and clear. And I just want to leave people with that thought right now. And think about this, friends. I like the interchange of what we just had here. And think about this. 90%+, some numbers I'm seeing are 95%, but whatever the number is, go to the search engine, Google. I mean, there are other little players out there, but not Google. Google is the, it's like Kleenex. When you blow your nose, you do it on Kleenex. It may not be a real Kleenex, but it is a Kleenex, right? I mean, this is what happens. You become part of the public conversation. It's called branded and marketing. And Google has that when it comes to search. And so there's the question I want to leave you with. Is it time to really force the AG Sessions to do something about this? And is he serious about it? And how do we look at these antitrust laws? How do we make them impact here? And what about a utility? Should they be treated like utility? And how do we break that up? And friends, it goes on and on and on. But in the meantime, we're losing the battle here, I'm telling you. And it's not just Google. There are others that have a large share of the market. And it's a real problem. I just want to leave you with that thought here. Listen, friends, on Viewpoint here, our goal each week is to bring you, this is the People's News Magazine. So we bring you the, you know, the unvarnished truth, and you do with it what you may. And, but I encourage you to take action, to get folks to step up, like our attorney generals, like our governors, like our politicians, our elected politicians and others, and have people be more responsible out there, including these scumbag executives who are running these corporations, friends. I think when they start pushing the envelope like they're doing, we need to take our power back and not allow it. I for one, will not accept it. Big thank you here to Dennis Santiago, Brian Gould for a great conversation. Friends, as Viewpoint rolls on up next year, the forces of good versus evil. So where does Donald Trump really fit into all of that? We'll take that up next as Viewpoint rolls up.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutLoud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Forces of good versus evil. Where does Donald Trump fit into all this? Well, earlier this week, I was having a very interesting conversation with our colleague and esteemed weekly columnist, George McClellan. And he and I started talking about good and evil and Donald Trump, where he fit into all of this, you see. And having said all of that, we didn't have the mic on. And you know, friends, it's one of those times when you're having a really good conversation and you wish the mic was hot. Well, it wasn't at that moment, but it is now. George McClellan is a historian and a political analyst. His professional career spans 43 years in law enforcement and the U.S. Naval Investigative Service. And also, joining us back here, Ava Armstrong is here. Ava is a political commentator, radio personality, producer here at America Out Loud. She's an author who writes about people like George, our law enforcement, our military, and with a focus on patriotism. A major collection of books on Amazon. Check those out, please. And good to have both of you here. We've had a great show up to now, so you guys are put to the test here, okay? So George, we started that conversation early this week about good versus evil. So listen, so I did a little bit of search after we talked about, you know, I just put good, evil, Donald Trump in the search bar and come up with all kinds of headlines. Donald Trump is a symptom of America's dark side. Donald Trump isn't mentally ill, he's evil. Donald Trump is not evil, he's just an amateur. Worst president ever? Question mark, you know, the multidimensional evil of Donald Trump.
Well, I think Donald Trump is God sent. America is falling apart. We read numerous accounts in our history where God created America. He sent these people here, our forefathers, to do exactly what they did, create a constitution for the people. Of the people, by the people, we know that. Mm-hmm. And now we've got this, the dark forces of socialism still banging on the doors, trying to tear down what is our Constitution and our really superb way of life. Years ago, Trump said on the Oprah Winfrey show, she asked him if he ever thought about becoming president.
Yeah.
And his response was, well, if he ever saw the country get into such a state, that he thought he had to do something, he would do it, mm-hmm. and he did it.
Yeah, that's a great point, George. We've all seen that video you're speaking about and that conversation he had with Oprah back then, because it's gone viral, of course. And he did say that. He said, well, no, not really, only if there is a need. And so let's talk about that need right now. Here's the difference right now, people. Now, George, when you mention a socialism there a moment and knocking on the door, see, here's the difference. Back then with Oprah and back to that and back to when, well, let me just bring it back clearly to all of you, when Barack Obama was president. Now, listen, most conservatives would tell you they were not a fan of the Obama presidency. But truth be told, people, a lot of people also weren't a fan of the Bush administration. So it wasn't really a Democrat or Republican problem. It was really more of a ideology, socialist versus a republic and what we stand for in this country problem. So when you take it from that vantage point, Ava, and we talk about socialism, back then, socialism was sort of behind the door. You know, we very lightly talked about it, but we never thought we'd be talking about it in America. Because I know, because on national radio, we were always, you couldn't really even attach that name to Obama, because they would have been, it'd have been very aggressive. It would have been fighting words. Today, socialism is right out in broad daylight now. It's right out in the open. They are no longer hiding it. It's no longer knocking on the door. It's come through the door, and it's out in right in the middle of the day here, Ava. That's kind of a big change in all of this, don't you think?
Oh, definitely. And it's couched in such loving terms like democratic socialism. You know, we can do this differently than Venezuela. You really have to sit down and think about this before you vote. And I'm doing a series of tweets right now on Twitter, and I'm really comparing and contrasting these two ideologies. And I think that's what we really need to do, is get down right to the fine bullet points here. I think it was very eye-opening. You're speaking about good versus evil. Mm-hmm. I see Donald Trump as a force for good. He's actually more conservative than Ronald Reagan was. Mm-hmm. I see evil when I watched the tape that was leaked on Twitter of the Google employees who were giving group hugs, mm-hmm. calling Trump supporters xenophobes. They were calling us all kinds of names. And they were telling, you know, about their shadow banning and how white people are horrible. If you put tweets out like that, you score points on their algorithm. There were several times people broke down and cried.
Yeah, we were just talking about that Google video. It was pretty amazing that was circulated there, Ava. You know, one of the perplexing things about all of this, you all, is that when Trump was running, he got major support from the evangelical crowd. You know, the evangelicals really stood up. Now, a lot of people were perplexed by that, you guys, okay? They were perplexed, saying, well, why would that be? These people are hypocrites. Why would they support the presidency or the campaign of a Donald Trump? I mean, this guy is a womanizer. He's abused people. He's been horrible. I mean, they come up with all kinds of adjectives and qualifiers as to why he's not a good human being. And, of course, these are the same people who believe that they are, you know, self-righteous, and they are just perfect, which, of course, we're seeing, as we talked about earlier in the show, none of them are. They all have more than a skeleton or two in their closet. But beside the point, so then I got thinking, George, when you and I were talking, we were talking about Trump, the good and the evil kind of thing, and I got thinking about the godsend. So would God send someone like a Donald Trump here? Well, the country had, let's paint this picture for everybody right now. The country had gone very far to the left at that point. The Obama presidency was a borderline socialist agenda. I mean, a lot of it was hidden. It wasn't out in broad daylight, as it's getting more and more now, as I share with you people. But let's be clear here, friends. There's no conservative in their right mind would support, not one in the country, would support or applaud an agenda that Obama had pushed forward in his 8 years. It's just a fact, people. It's not a partisan comment. It's not a Democrat or Republican comment. It's just a fact of life. So having said all of that now, I've thought long and hard, George, about this evangelical crowd and Donald Trump. And I have to think about it in this terms, George. You know, they were smart enough to look, they prayed about it. They prayed. They looked at all of this. And believe me, I know these people prayed really hard to find out, is he the right man for the times, Lord? I mean, they prayed to God to understand, could he be the right guy? I mean, he's not your exact altar boy. He's not Mr., you know, Mr. Clean. You wouldn't be seeing him do those Mr. Clean commercials on television, you know, with the bald head, you know, that guy there, yeah? I mean, he's got some cobwebs in his closet, clearly, yeah?
Well, evangelicals sign for what he is. They did not want a perfect man. Jesus was already filled that role. They wanted somebody to save them. And here he comes. And he comes with the baggage that they attend to him. But when you read his background, you see how giving and caring he is to other people. He pays off people's mortgages. He pays off people's education. He helps people who help others. And we never hear any of that. All we hear is how racist he is. Mm-hmm. And if you look at his workforce in Trump Tower, he's got a lot of African-Americans working there who would never get a job anywhere else. He gave them the chance, and they proved him right. So he comes with his baggage. It's, nobody's perfect, and evangelicals see that. They understand it. That's why they're not falling away from him.
You know, and then, Ava, you take a look at this book that Bob Woodward has out there called Fear, right? Fear, right? That's playing out there? Yeah. And, you know, there should be an opposing book to that. You could write this, Ava, really easy. And, you know, based on everything we're talking about right here, you know what the opposing book to that would be? It would be called Fearless.
Yeah, exactly. Donald Trump is not a perfect man by any stretch of the imagination, but he has some excellent policy ideas, and I think we really need to get behind him. These are ideas that have been percolating for a long time in the Republican Party, but nobody has had the leadership qualities to step up and actually make them happen, and he has. So he's a guy that comes through on his promises, and you know, I can't say that for many of our past Republican presidents, nor a Democrat president for that matter.
So I think the answer back to that is, I'm telling you, I think it really is about fearless. So when you look at Donald Trump today, the president, was he the perfect human being to take that role? Probably not. I mean, was he totally clean on all? I mean, what I mean by that is this, guys. When you think of a politician who's going to run for president, I mean, let's call it, friends. I mean, you have to pretty well be protected. You can't have anything that, you know, they're going to go into your closets, George. They're going to pull out everything they can from the fact that you were in diapers.
Trump, and I'm going to disagree with you on one point. Trump is flawed, but he is the perfect man for the job that needs to be done.
Interesting, Ava. I like what he says there. The perfect man for the job that needs to be done. Do you hear that?
Oh, yeah. I think he's a tough guy. He's from Queens. He's dealt with people all of his life who have, you know, been trying to swindle him or, you know, push him around. He's come from a tough background. I know a lot of people, you know, they claim, well, he's a billionaire, blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? You don't become a billionaire always by, you know, dealing with nice people. I mean, it's a tough life that he's had, and he's worked very hard to get what he's gotten, and he's losing money being president. A lot of people don't recognize that fact. I'm really saddened that the press and everybody has decided to tell every lie about Donald Trump that they can possibly do, including Bob Woodward. He should be ashamed of himself.
You know, remember, he's not a Republican.
That's right.
He's a business.
That's right.
He's a businessman. He's certainly not a Democrat.
Right.
That's why he's there, and that's why he's being successful, and that's why they are attacking him so vehemently.
Again, back to what we've been talking about, we're at a tipping point, people, and it's interesting to see the spin on all of this, the spin. Let's leave with that thought there, the forces of good versus evil. Again, visit us at AmericaOutloud.com. It's all back there, all the commentary and comments and honesty you could possibly stand in your life. It's all back on the platform, friends. Big thank you here to George McClellan and Ava Armstrong. We really appreciate all of our experts today on the show here. And friends, remember again, always, Viewpoint This Sunday delivers an honest analysis and opinions on all sides of the political aisle. While we don't discriminate against an opinion, the main thing is we are always in search of the out loud truth.